Kansas City, 19, during the Southern Baptist Convention in Kansas City, 1956, Brother Deb Stinnett was elected second vice president. He presided during the convention, assisting the president in Chicago in 1957. He passed away in February 1958. Therefore, I make a motion that this convention send a message of sympathy to Mrs. Deb Stinnett and daughters, Meridian, Mississippi.
Motion is made and seconded. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Opposed, no. Motion is unanimously approved.
Mr. Chairman, some of the messengers did not receive copies of the Book of Reports. We felt that you would want to have the full report of the Committee to Study the Total Southern Baptist Convention Program as it is discussed this afternoon. And so we have had printed additional copies of the full report of that committee. And if you did not receive a copy of the Book of Reports, you can obtain one of these at the registration desk as you leave this morning, or they will be available as you come to the service this afternoon. We wanted you to have this information report in your hands as you come for the meeting this afternoon. If you have a copy of the Book of Reports, please do not take one, because those can be used for other messengers. Thank you.
Brother Ruth, I wonder if we might not distribute these through the ushers rather than at the registration desk. It's such a small area there, and I'll try to get them in the hands of the ushers as you leave and as you come in.
That'll
be better.
Chair recognizes Brother H.H. Hargrove of Texas.
Brother President, one of the noblest and most faithful of our Baptist leaders has recently fallen beneath the burden of one of our great institutions. I refer to Dr. J. Howard Williams. This convention certainly ought to take some action recognizing his service and certainly sending a message of condolence to the family. I move that the Resolutions Committee be asked to prepare a suitable statement and message, send a copy to the family, and that the statement be included in the minutes of this session.
Heard the motion. Is there a second? Motion is duly seconded. Those in favor will say aye. Opposed, no. Of course, there is no opposition. Chair recognizes, under the head of miscellaneous business, our first vice president, Dr. Hutchins.
Mr. President, messengers of the convention, yesterday in the adoption of one of the recommendations of the executive committee, namely the creation of a new type committee on order of business, the heart of which was a continuing committee, it was included also that the chairman of the present Committee on Order of Business and subsequently the same person in that office be made a member of that committee. It so happens that the present chairman of the Committee on Order of Business is being recommended for election as a member of another board or commission or committee. And therefore, I'm sure the Committee on Committees felt that it was a technical impossibility to include him. I would therefore, Mr. President, after conference with our executive secretary and other members here on the platform, I would like to propose, if I may, for your unanimous consent, and therefore the possibility of doing it now, I would like therefore to propose that in bylaw number 7, section D, that we delete three words, namely, or standing committees.
Now, if you do not have this before you, that makes little sense. What I'm asking for your convention officials, and to implement what you did yesterday, is the deletion from the bylaws of the requirement that no man shall serve on a standing committee who is also a member of a board or a commission. There are two standing committees, public affairs and order of business. It's necessary, as many of you will know, for some duplication to arise. And to avoid the technicality, I would, for your unanimous consent, suggest that we delete the three words which will solve our problem. I would so move, or if the chair rules, I ask unanimous consent that that be done.
I believe Brother Hudgens has made it perfectly clear that this does require unanimous consent. And so the chair propounds this unanimous consent request. Is there objection to the deletion as he described it? The chair hears none.
Is the motion in order?
Therefore, Brother President, I move that the three words "or standing committees" be deleted from Section D of Bylaw Number 7.
Yes, it does.
You have heard the motion. Those in favor will say aye. Is there any opposition?
Brother President, there is objection. Therefore, I propose this motion for consideration at a miscellaneous business period this afternoon at a time either the President or the Committee on Order of Business might suggest.
Is there any other miscellaneous business? The chair recognizes the brother from Alabama.
Number two.
All right, that's
Mr. President, a little while ago, I made a motion. I am Jack Crammel, Selma, Alabama, concerning the contents of the report, financial page on page 291, Christian Life Commission, concerning the receipt of funds from public foundation, Ford Foundation, the fund through the Fund for the Republic. The chairman of the commission himself stated a little while ago that the commission was operating under biblical principles. Paul, the Apostle Paul says to abstain from all appearances of evil. To me, there is an appearance of evil on page 291 due to the fact that I stated a little while ago that presently, as has been presented to the Treasury Department of our government, reports verifying the fact that the Fund for the Republic is giving comfort and aid to communist organizations. Therefore, in the light of such facts that have been published, I remake the motion that I made a little while ago that this convention return the $15,000 grant and that no further funds be received through this organization.
I second that motion.
You've heard the motion. Is there further discussion?
Chair recognized Brother Wells. Brother Bell.
I am a member of the Christian Life Commission. I'm located in Nashville, Tennessee. When the Christian Life Commission agreed to accept this money, they did not do it lightly, but they considered it seriously. In fact, one of the meetings I attended, we had heard something of the accusations that had been brought against this foundation. So we delayed taking action on it until a further time. In the meantime, I personally went to the Joint University's library and gathered together all the materials of all nature that I could on this particular subject. And after studying it thoroughly, I was convinced that there was nothing subversive about this organization. We understand also Dr. Miller has, of the Christian Life Commission, has told the Christian Life Commission he has written to the Attorney General of the United States and has received a letter from him stating that this organization is not now and never has been listed as subversive. I also understand that Dr. Reuben Alley, the editor of the Religious Herald of Virginia, has made an exhaustive study of this, and I understand he would be glad to bear personal testimony at this time concerning the hearing.
Chair recognizes Brother Lee of Louisiana.
As a representative from Louisiana on the Christian Life Commission, I would speak personally in opposition to this motion. We have accepted throughout our Southern Baptist Convention territory money from the Ford fortune. It all comes from one pot, shall we say, through two different channels. You have heard that one of these channels has been cleared. The other one, the Ford Foundation, has given untold millions to our Baptist hospitals and our Baptist colleges. I serve on a hospital board that has received money from the Ford Foundation for its hospital service. And it would be just as logical that we give all of that money back. So we would speak in opposition, or I would, to this motion. There are no strings attached to the money that we have received in any of these organizations.
Chair recognizes Brother McCann of Tennessee.
The Christian Life Commission has been operating on a shoestring, a very short shoestring. We have not had increased appropriations over a number of years to meet our growing needs. The needs are at least threefold, one coming from inflation, the second coming from the growth of the Southern Baptist Convention, and the third coming from the felt needs from our Southern Baptist people for literature and for conferences, for talks from our executive secretary and so forth. And for several years now, the Christian Life Commission has gone to the Finance Committee of the executive board asking for increased appropriations from the Southern Baptist Convention for the Christian Life Commission. Now, this past year, we made a very urgent request for increased appropriations. We have been granted, according to the proposed budget, $21,000, which is a $1,000 increase. We ask for at least $15,000 as a very minimum to meet the working needs of the Christian Life Commission. And this was not granted. Now, in order to carry out the mandate of the Southern Baptist Convention to operate this commission, it's imperative, it's almost necessary that we seek from some other source to some funds to carry on a minimum amount of work that the members and churches of the Southern Baptist Convention have requested of us. And so for this reason, we accepted funds from an organization outside the Southern Baptist Convention, feeling that it was entirely in accordance with the general principles of our convention in seeking funds outside of the cooperative program. And all the people, the leaders of the convention with whom the Christian Life Commission talked about this matter, agreed that it was in accord with the general principles of the convention to receive this money. Therefore, I feel the motion should be defeated.
Mr. President? The chair has a request from Brother Lambert of Mississippi, and he's going to recognize him.
One thing which has been stated here, I feel, needs clarification. The money as received, stated in the annual, says from the Ford Foundation through the Fund for the Republic. Ford dealers all over the United States received a brochure from the Ford Foundation after the Fund for the Republic had been making many of its grants, in which the foundation disclaimed any connection with the grants
from the Fund for the Republic. Therefore, we're dealing with the Fund for the Republic and not funds from the Ford Foundation. I feel that's necessary. It's necessary for clarification because the Ford Foundation itself disclaims further connection with the Fund for the Republic.
Mr. President?
Yes, the chair recognizes the gentleman who made the motion.
May I make another statement?
Yes.
The question, of course, as has been clarified, is concerning the Fund for the Republic. I do not believe that the Congress of the United States would have investigated and at present made a recommendation to the Treasury Department for any organization to be withdrawn its privileges of tax exemption that was not tainted with some aspects of communism. The organization, as a matter of record, has granted funds not only to religious organizations and denominations and institutions, but also to other institutions that are recognized as communist front organizations. That was the basis for the motion which I made.
Yes. The chair recognizes Brother Culbreth of Florida.
Mr. President, 1 year ago, the convention in Chicago elected me a member of the Christian Life Commission, and I frankly admit that I knew very little about the work of this commission. During this 1 year, I've tried to serve on it. I've learned quite a bit about it. The commission has published 27 tracts on 10 different themes, and the racial matter is just one of them. It deals with the liquor and salacious literature and gambling and all other moral and civic problems of our land. And much of this money from the Ford Foundation, by the way, the public fund is a part of the Ford Foundation set up by Henry Ford. Even though it's not directly, it's still in the same pot from that company. And much of the money that we have received from them has been toward the publishing of these 27 tracts, which you'll find down in the Christian Life Commission booth. And I think you will agree that these tracts are very helpful and along Christian lines. Therefore, I hope we will vote the motion down.
Mr. President.
The chair has promised to recognize Brother Alley of Virginia next. Brother Alley.
President and members of the convention, some while ago, I received a communication from a brother concerning this allocation to the Christian Life Commission by the Fund for the Republic. In that letter, there were serious charges made against the Fund for the Republic, and other questions were involved. Well, I never liked to print in the Religious Herald. In fact, we never did purposefully print in the Religious Herald any such communication unless we know that there is foundation for the charge, or unless we print the letter and then comment upon it editorially. And since this involved one of the agencies of our convention, and the question was a serious one, I laid the letter aside and gave my time and attention to the charges by going to Washington for an investigation myself. And with the assistance of a congressman from my part of Virginia, I was able to get the information which I desired. And as a result of that, I learned this, that the Fund for the Republic is absolutely and completely untainted by any relationship to communistic associations. There is no ground for these charges. The fact that someone sees fit to throw into the hopper some plan to investigate an organization, well, my goodness, Congress could investigate me if somebody sent my name in, and they could investigate you, but the fact that somebody has proposed an investigation means absolutely nothing. Congress has taken no action whatever with respect to the Fund for the Republic, and there is no basis for the charges as far as the information which I have gotten from Washington is concerned. There is no basis whatever for these charges, and I regret that we would be so free-handed in dealing out this kind of propaganda against agencies when we do not have any ground for such action. And I hope that this convention will not lend itself to any such procedure. I was interested. I got my information. I have correspondence in my files, and on the basis of that information, I wrote the editorial which appeared in the Religious Herald. Thank you. Mr. President.
The chair recognizes Brother Burton for an announcement first.
This is on a committee matter. W.A. Duncan, member of the committee, go to the committee room immediately.
Did the brother from Alabama again desire recognition?
No, this is Walter Dahlgrove from Georgia.
Yes, the brother from Georgia.
I personally am all confused and mixed up over this discussion. I do not know personally if these charges are true or false, and I think that is true with this entire convention. I would like to ask you, in the capacity of congressman, if you know anything related personally to this discussion. And if not, I would like to offer an amendment that I would amend this motion that we not accept any further funds until this convention shall have had opportunity to have definitely cleared this matter.
Well, the chair would, yes, that would require an amendment. And I have no information to add to what Brother Alley gave you. It is true that any individual member of Congress can propose an investigation on any subject. And, of course, as a privilege, he may even indulge in libelous statements under his constitutional privilege. I fear it has been exercised at times. But the chair is not able to add to anything that Brother Alley said. Now, it could be that there have been later developments. I have an idea that when you go into it, you'll find that it represents not any official action, either by the House Committee on Un-American Activities, and certainly not by the House. I should say that is clear. But that you will find it represents individual views of one or more of the members that have been expressed. And so, unfortunately, views of one individual have been attributed to the full committee. For whatever light that sheds on the question, I make that observation. Now, the brother from Mississippi, or the brother from Georgia, am I correctly identifying you?
Yes,
the brother at the microphone.
Yes.
Now, do you have any further questions? The chair would be happy to give you as much help on this. I realize that it involves a very complex question, and I'm glad that we've had enough time to hear from the brothers who are familiar with the decisions that were made as to whether or not a gift should be accepted. I have an idea that we should be proceeding. The time is rather short. The chair doesn't want to cut off anyone, but we are somewhat limited.
Well,
will the brother proceed? Yes.
My feeling is that this convention does not want to accept any monies that are tainted by any means.
Well, now, what did Brother and yes, and I'm sure that statement represents the views of the entire convention.
Yes.
We it takes no action by this convention to establish a policy of that kind.
No.
But
that was my purpose of amending that we not accept future funds until this is definitely clear.
Well, Brother Merritt, read the motion.
The motion is as follows. That this convention return the $15,000 grant from the Ford Foundation through the Fund for the Republic, and that no further funds be received from this organization.
The chair recognizes Dr. Miller. Brother Chairman, I'm very sure that the convention would not want to vote to return this money on the basis of some misinformation that we might have about it. Now, Dr. Alley has cleared the matter, and more than that, we've cleared this matter before we ever accepted the money from the convention. You will pardon the personal word. I've been an ordained Baptist minister. I started to say preacher, but those that hear me never call me that. An ordained Baptist minister for 45 years, and I have attended 42 sessions of the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, I do not want to be dramatic, but I think that those of you who have worked with me in denominational work understand that I had sooner lose my right arm than to throw any kind of question on Southern Baptists for lack of integrity or anything of the sort. And we would not have received this money if we had not, in our commission, cleared it up from substantial evidence backed by direct letters from the Attorney General's office, by a report of the un-American activities in a book of 156 pages, including the index in which this fund is not listed, and by a subsequent report from the chairman of the committee himself, that this fund is not tainted with any degree of communism. This information comes from press reports and from word-of-mouth information, and if we find that by our investigations before we accepted it, that this money received from the Fund for the Republic is every bit as worthy as the $9.5 million that had been received just a little bit before that by 27 Southern Baptist colleges and 24 Southern Baptist colleges and 34 hospitals. In other words, if some took $9.5 million from the pants pocket of Mr. Ford, we thought that our little agency might take 15 or 30 from his best pocket. And I'd like to say briefly now that this literature was produced on the question of race and the other subjects from the requests of our people in Southern Baptist churches for information. And that is a program committed to us by the Southern Baptist Convention to support and supply information on these various issues. We found that the convention had not given us sufficient funds. We went out in accordance with the financial plan of the Southern Baptist Convention and in accordance with the committee program committed to us by action of this convention, and sought this additional funds. And I'd like to say that we went first of all to some sources in the Southland, but secured not enough. But we secured this grant without any string attached at all. And we've used it to answer the requests of our people on this vital issue. And therefore, I think that we do not need to send it back, but that we will say this, that we will not receive, this commission will not receive any more funds from this source, even though they should offer it to us, simply because we do not want to bring confusion in the fellowship of this convention, and we would not. If you knew the facts that we have, there would not be any confusion now. So may God bless us and lead us together as we say kindly, let's not send it back, but seek to carry forward the program of our work. Chair recognizes Brother Frank Tripp.
Brother President, our hospitals received with very great appreciation $312,500 from the Ford Foundation, which was a part of the largest philanthropy in the history of the United States. When the Ford Foundation made available to hospitals, colleges throughout the nation, more than $500 million. When we were asked, or when we were offered that money, the only conditions we had to meet were, first, it would not be used for operating expenses. Secondly, it would not be used for the payment of debt. It could be used for buildings or equipment or for any service that would improve the facilities of our hospitals for the use of the people of the communities in which they're located. Personally, I regret very much that this convention has been asked to make a decision of such tremendous and far-reaching consequences based upon a rumor or a report or even an indictment before the facts are before us. And I would like to say, if you get penitent enough to offer us or to order us to give the money back, because we've already spent it. You know, I spent many years in the pastorate, and I have a notion that in those churches we received money from some deacons and other brethren who later in life sort of kicked over the traces a little, but we didn't give them their money back.
Thank you. Mr. President,
the chair must advise the convention that the time has expired. You want it extended. Are you ready for the question? The previous question is ordered. Those in favor of the previous question will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. You're ready for the previous question. The question is, shall the motion offered by the gentleman from Alabama to return the $15,000 be agreed to? Those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes have it. Is there any other miscellaneous business? Chair here is none. The chair recognizes the brother at microphone number one. Brother Taylor.
From Baltimore, Maryland, where they make the whiskey that makes you a person of distinction. And two fellas got rather too much distinguished. They went out and sat down on the railroad, and one of them said to the other, Jim, I'm going to buy all the railroads in the United States. He said, no, you're not. I won't sell them to you. I attended the hearing on the Langer bill, and that's what I wanted to say a word about.
Does the brother have a motion to make or miscellaneous business to submit?
Yes, sir.
The chair made the announcement about the time. Brother Moore advises me that we have not only consumed all the time, but that it has run over. I wonder if, in the interest, again, of orderly procedure, the brother could not reserve his motion until the miscellaneous business hour at a later session. Brother Taylor, will you resume the chair, please?
The next order of business is the report of the Commission on the American Baptist Seminary
And the chair recognizes Dr. L.S. Sedbury.
The report of the Commission on the American Baptist Theological Seminary is found on page 271 of the Book of Reports. There are two corrections that we would like to offer. First of all, we would like to correct the statement that National Baptists have not approved the movement to build a chapel. They have since this report was written, and they have agreed to furnish the chapel. The second correction is under the topic Interconvention Cooperation. And I would like to read the opening sentence of that paragraph. The National Baptist Convention Incorporated and the Southern Baptist Convention have had 35 years of cooperative effort in ministerial education. This cooperation has done much good, and many graduates of the seminary have risen to places of leadership in the National Baptist Convention. Their attitude toward Southern Baptists continues to be friendly and appreciative. And that should close that paragraph. And Mr. Chairman, with these corrections, I would like to move the adoption of this report.
Is there a second to the motion? It is moved and seconded that the report be adopted with the changes suggested. Brother Sedbury has the floor.
First of all, I want to introduce one who has had a great deal to do with the promotion of the seminary for several years, Dr. Primrose Funchess. I want her to stand and let you see the woman who has promoted the seminary in a large way. Then I want to introduce a friend of the seminary for just a testimony, Dr. Henley Barnett of Southern Seminary at Louisville visited the American Seminary 10 years ago. He visited the seminary again this year as a lecturer in the Garnet Neighbors Lectures. I want him to give us a testimony, Dr. Barnett.
During the past decade, the American Baptist Theological Seminary has made tremendous progress. Recently, I was on the campus to participate in the Neighbors Garnet Lectures, and I noticed three things. One, an improvement in the personnel of this great institution. We are happy now that Dr. Maynard Turner, who is a great leader, is president of this institution. He is academically competent and spiritually committed to do the job of president of this great institution. And of course, our good friend, Dr. Sedbury, has been the inspiration of this institution for many years. I notice also an improvement in the quality of the faculty and in the student body. They're graduating 17 very fine young men from this institution this year. Also, I noticed an improvement in the buildings. They have a lovely library. It's small, but it is adequate for their needs at the present moment, that is, building-wise. But they need books, and I never get up to make a speech without putting some teeth into it. Now, I want you to join me. When you go back home, pull one of the best books you have in theology out of your library and send it to the American Baptist Theological Seminary in Nashville. No trash, please. Good books in theology.
Thank you, Doctor. Now, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to present the new president of the seminary, and I would like to tell you something about him. He holds an A.B. degree from Fisk University, Nashville, Tennessee, a B.D. degree from Eden Theological Seminary in Missouri, and the Ph.D. degree from Central Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City. He has served as dean of Western Baptist Seminary, Kansas City, as dean of the School of Religion, Bishop College, Marshall, Texas. We want to present to you today, for a short, brief message, Dr. Maynard T. Turner, the new president of the American Baptist Theological Seminary. Dr. Turner.
Thank you, Dr. Sedbury. Before I shall say anything, I should like for you to hear this time our director of promotion, Miss Funster. She simply stood, and I'm not quite sure that all of you saw her, but I should like for her to have a word at this time.
My dear friends, I'm perfectly pleased to bring you greetings from the President of the National Baptist Convention and the National Baptist Convention Incorporated itself. I wish to thank you for all of the good things you've done for the American Baptist Theological Seminary. I assure you that we are deeply grateful for all that you've done and all that you're going to do. The American Baptist Theological Seminary is making great strides. We are progressing rapidly. We are attracting finer students. You're going to be proud and never regret what you have done. We are happy today to bring to you our new president. But we want you to know that the National Baptist Convention and its distinguished president appreciate Dr. L.S. Sedbelt as secretary of the commission. We work with him untiringly. He's deeply interested in the school. We want you to know that National Baptists love Dr. L.S. Sedbelt. Our president, Dr. Turner, is presenting to us a new program, and we are going to show you that we are going to have one of the finest schools that Southern Baptist supports anywhere in America or any parts of the world.
I first feel that I should say my personal respects and appreciation to the very fine president of this great convention. We had the pleasure of meeting him on our campus a few months ago when he brought a gift to the school, and the entire campus fell in love with the Honorable Mr. Hayes, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I also feel that I should pay respect to this organization, the Southern Baptist Convention. It is the largest, numerically speaking, single religious organization in this country. But largeness does not necessarily mean greatness. On the other hand, we can feel in this instance that not only is the Southern Baptist Convention the largest, numerically speaking, but it is as great as it is large. We feel that the Southern Baptist Convention, in the great work which it is doing, is following much in the tradition of the Father of the faithful. When God made a promise to him that he would be a great people, it is said that his children would be as numerous as the sands of the sea. But it was not only in the promise that he should be the father of a numerous people, but the close of that blessing to Abraham stated that in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. We feel that the Southern Baptist Convention has assumed the responsibility of its greatness by attempting through the mighty ramifications of its program to bless the families of the world. Not only have you received large numbers into your ranks, and not only have you received the material blessings from the hand of God, but you have felt a sense of responsibility to distribute those blessings around the world. And we are grateful that we have been included in that group to be assisted by you at American Baptist Theological Seminary in Nashville, Tennessee. And inasmuch as we are receiving your assistance and your splendid cooperation, we too feel an obligation to improve our work, to raise its standards, and to send even greater and more successful men out into the various fields of this country, that you may feel even more so that your investment has been justified. We pray God's continued choicest blessings upon you. The question is upon the acceptance of the report. Are you ready to vote? All in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no. And it is so ordered. I recognize Reverend Gilbert.
The Committee on Order of Business asked me to report to you that the vote on the proposed amendment to the bylaw offered by Dr. Doug Hudgens will be taken at 2:10 p.m.
We come now to the hour for the report of Southern Baptist Seminaries, and I recognize Dr. Duke K. McCall, President of Southern Seminary, for this report.
Mr. President, I come to you in two capacities. First, as the rotating chairman of the Inter-Seminary Council, which means that it just happens to be my turn to be chairman. And my first responsibility is to present to you the report of Southern Seminary, which you will find in the Book of Reports, beginning on page 242. On the eve of its centennial, the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary is blessed with many wonderful assets. Most important is the rootage of the seminary in the life and love of the Southern Baptist Convention. Born in the dreams of Southern Baptists in 1859, it has been sustained through love expressed in sacrificial gifts, not only of money, but also of prayers, and also of the children of our Baptist home. Throughout its history, the seminary has been particularly fortunate in the quality of men who have served on its board of trustees. Their loyal giving of time and energy, the sharing of their experience and vision, has been an asset without price. The student body of the seminary has been as remarkable for its diversity, as witness some of you who are alumni, as for its common devotion to doing the will of God. How optimistic we are when we evaluate the present student body on the scale of accomplishment in service of the alumni of whom we are always proud. The buildings and equipment of the seminary are magnificent, though too small, but only for the reason that the seminary has grown too large. The administrative staff is both very competent and totally committed to serving the seminary as under the call of God. The faculty of all three schools of the seminary in every regard is excellent. The decade immediately ahead will see its contributions not only in the lives of the students, but also in the leadership of individual men, both as outstanding scholars in their respective fields and also as statesmen and leaders in the life of the Southern Baptist Convention. And I am reading parts of this report because I'm afraid you won't read it if I don't read it to you. Somebody I know agreed with me then. I heard him let out his breath when I said it. Responsibilities for the life of the seminary are organized in three separate and specific spheres. Policy-making functions belong to the Board of Trustees. Academic functions belong to the faculty. Operational functions belong to the administration. These functions are not performed in airtight compartments and obviously interact upon each other and require, therefore, the highest degree of coordination of effort, understanding, and objectives between the trustees, faculty, and administration. The specific organization and delegation of responsibilities is in accordance with the management consultant report of Booz Allen and Hamilton adopted by the Board of Trustees March 1957. The faculty is organized into five schools. The heart of the seminary has been and always will be the School of Theology. Second in chronological sequence is the School of Church Music, with its fine faculty and student body. Third, the School of Religious Education, established in 1953. The Summer School, established in 1954. The Evening School, primarily for the wives of the seminary students, and over 70% of the theological students, not only in our seminary, but in the United States, are married today. And then we also join in the Extension Department, a specific report from which you will hear a little bit later. New members of the faculty include Professors Russell A. Hammer, William Bushnell, Grady Morris Hinson, Dr. Samuel Southard from the Texas Medical Center here in Houston, who came to us as Associate Professor of Psychology of Religion, Miss Elizabeth Hutchins, Dr. Nolan T. Harrington, known to you as the honored and effective pastor of the First Baptist Church of Little Rock, Arkansas, coming as Associate Professor of Preaching, Dr. Peyton Thurman, coming to fill the newly created position of Dean of Students, also William Edward Hull and John Sim. In addition, from the mission field, we have had on our campus as visiting professors this year, H. Cecil McConnell, William Coleman Harrison, and Paige Kelly. The 1957-58 enrollment of Southern Seminary is 1,548. We would like also to call your attention to the urgent invitation to you to be present at the centennial celebration of the seminary in connection with the 1959 session of the Southern Baptist Convention in Louisville, Kentucky, where our alumni join with Long Run Baptist Association, the Churches of Louisville, and Southern Seminary as hosts to this convention. They have promised, and we are going to help them keep their promise, to be out in the private home so that you may have the hotel rooms, which otherwise would not be sufficient in number to entertain the convention. The auditorium will be adequate with 22,000 seats, so you'll be able to get in, we think, for most of the sessions of the convention. It will be a driving convention. If you can come in your car, we hope you will come. There will be 10,000 places to park your car free immediately adjacent to the auditorium. I see some of you brought your car here, where these wonderful friends in Houston have done such a magnificent job of entertaining this convention, which is impossible because of its tremendous size. But thank God for the blessings that create the size. Then I would like to say a word to you that is by way of announcement. On June the 5th, in just a few days, the trustees will open the bids and begin the construction of the James T. Boyce Centennial Library, which will not only give us an adequate library, but which will also be a means of marking the honor in which we hold this founder of our seminary. And we want you to know that we welcome you to come to our campus when you are in Louisville and to participate in the cornerstone laying of the James T. Boyce Library. In conclusion, perhaps I should close this 99th year report of Southern Seminary with the words of John A. Broadus concerning, quote, the work which we sought to do and did begin, unquote, and which, by God's grace and Southern Baptist support, we will complete. God grant us a place in your heart and concern and prayers, that we may be ever the agent of the Southern Baptist Convention and the instrument of the gospel of Jesus Christ, our Savior and our Lord. May I now have the privilege of presenting to you my good friend, Dr. J. Wash Watts, the acting president of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, who comes now with their report.
President Lebel would be in this spot at this moment had not the hand of God touched his physical frame with paralyzing effect on January 19 past. Were he here, he would be telling you, I'm sure, with measured but passionate tones, that the greatest dream of his life is now coming to pass. The chapel of the seminary is under construction at this very time, and we shall pause at this moment to try to give to you a picture. This will be a picture of what the chapel is expected to be. Ground was broken for this chapel on March 21. In the presence of a great audience of friends, trustees, faculty members, and students, Dr. Lebel himself turned the first spade full of dirt. Mr. Winkup of Mississippi had brought a splendid address reflecting the efforts and influence of Dr. Lebel in bringing our building program to an apex of achievement in this chapel. Then Dr. Lebel walked to a prepared spot in our midst and laid his hand upon that stage. He did it with a joy that clothed him from head to foot. And he left in hundreds of pictures a triumphant picture that will perpetuate the memory. It is becoming for us to remember at each stage in this supreme effort of our building program that the purpose of the chapel is to place worship and prayer at the very heart of the seminary's life. The chief symbol of this holy purpose will be the prayer room. In the base of that spire at which you've just looked, this prayer room will stand. The spire itself, by the way, is to be a replica of the spire built upon the First Baptist Church of Providence, Rhode Island. As you perhaps already know, that spire was built according to plans made by Sir Christopher Wren, the great English architect and the builder of St. Paul's in London. There in the base of the spire, this room will be built in an octagonal form in order that it may reproduce as completely as possible the prayer room that stood upon the old campus of the seminary, and which was an exceedingly significant symbol of the spiritual life of the school, that which has sanctified so many experiences during the years past. The room itself will carry that beautiful, that exceedingly lovely mantle of onyx and the great square mirror that stood over it. Things like these may serve to remind the prayerful soul of the loveliness of the mansions in our Father's abode, and likewise on each of the other walls of that room will stand the great oval mirrors that were there. If one comes to the exact center of that room, he can find in these four mirrors, in those other eight walls and their mirrors, if one stands in the exact center of the room, he will find an endless reflection which may remind one of those visions of hope that are created for every child of the covenant when he comes through faith to the Lord and Savior. But I recognize the fact that above all these things, the spiritual experience that fulfills these symbols is the only thing that is essential. These symbols may fade as the plans of men, and the concrete and mortar that makes a structure like this must crumble eventually into the dust of the ages. But the visions that are created by things like these will abide as a picture of that glory to come to that comes to every believing soul as it is brought by the hand of God's grace into the very throne room of God.
Now to present the report from the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, Dr. Ellis Carnett, president of Buckner Enterprises. Dr. Carnett.
Dr. McCaw, I've been asked by the trustees of Southwestern Seminary to bring to you resolutions adopted by the trustees concerning the going of our beloved president, the late Dr. J. Howard Williams. I think those of you who knew Dr. Williams, you loved him. Those of you who knew about him, admired him. I believe you would like to stand and at the close a moment of silent prayer as I read the resolution. Would you stand, please? I preface the resolutions, our committee, with the wonderful verse of Scripture which all of us believe even though we do not understand it every time, Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Whereas in the wisdom of an all-wise heavenly Father, we have had taken from us our beloved president, Dr. J. Howard Williams, who was a man of faith and great vision, a devoted husband, father, and a friend worthy of every confidence, who served the Lord through his denomination in many capacities, administrator, pastor, state secretary, member of boards of institutions, preacher of the gospel at home and in foreign lands, and last but not least,